Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome on this bright, wonderful, lovely afternoon in Prashanthi Nilayam. It is the 9th of January and we have just had a new year begin, and it all seems so bright and sprightly out here. The sports meet preparations are on. All the students from all the campuses of Swami's educational institutions are here at Prashanthi. They are practicing hard for what is going to be a grand finale on the 11th of January and the following few days also, where there will be excellent drama and other cultural presentations in the Sai Kulwant Hall. So it is a very happening week, a very happening season, a wonderful season where, you know, Swami would say on many occasions, especially during the Sankranti discourses, that this is a time of activity and all the activity which should be focused towards God. In fact, he would often quote the truth that the great Kaurava warrior, that is Bhishma, waited exactly for this period to give up his life. In fact, any action done during this period with God as the focus is bound to result in the most wonderful things. And therefore, it is on that bright and happy note that we begin this afternoon satsang, for which I am sure we have a very, very debatable, riveting and gripping topic. And in order to enhance this topic of satsang, I would like to invite all of you from all around the world and place our humble gratitude and offering at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and then Sai Ram to Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind, and putting it very simply, that yes, it is one of the most well-debated and questionable topics, and very difficult to take one side or the other. And I'm sure that whichever side you take, you will end up not convincing some people who will believe the other way. But nevertheless, it's a very interesting topic, and it's a topic which, in my understanding, a question of this nature will always arise in a spiritual aspirant's life, especially when you come to a master, especially when you take up, for that matter, in anybody who's trying to achieve anything in life, you know, sometime or the other, they will come up with this question.
And the question is?
What really governs our life? Is it destiny, or is it our self-effort, or is there anything called free will?
Dear listeners, we must confess that the topic of today's satsang was inspired from two or three questions that came to us as feedback. Not questions actually, two or three feedback, among which was one question which really struck us and set us also thinking. We thought for long and we thought really strong. I mean, before what you're going to hear today, let me assure you that Prem and me have had a lot of discussions, a lot of very strong, in fact, quite heated debates. But before we go into all that and share what Swami has inspired in us, I think it will be nice that we start off with the question that came to us.
Right.
You know, we had a satsang last week on resolutions, New Year resolutions, right. And in that respect, we narrated few incidents. So this listener had the question, and I quote directly, "Today I heard the satsang on resolutions. It was God sent to me, and as my family had come across a big tragedy recently. I was wondering whether God really interferes with one's karma. I got hope when I heard your conversation. However, there are a few dilemmas in my mind which I would like to share with you. Why does God not interfere in one's karma most of the times? If one knows what was going to come, either through astrology, palmistry, etc., and if he acts according to dharma, how can one hold on to the faith that God will surely change his destiny? The things that happened in my life are surely discouraging. And you know, they tell me that only destiny wins." So this was the query from the reader.
Well, she starts off, she or he, whoever it is, starts off by saying that the discussion gave a lot of hope. I don't know what this discussion is going to give to that person, whether it's hope or more confusion or more conviction in whatever they believe in. But nevertheless, as I said, this is a question which would come to everybody at some point or the other. Because, you know, if you look at each one's life, we are all the time putting some effort. We are always making decisions in life. We always are choosing one thing from what is remaining. So all the time you're making a conscious decision. right? Or you're doing something consciously. Then this question comes, does all this effort and does all this, because every time you make a decision, there's so much of mental gymnastics which goes into it. Does all this actually have any bearing on what happens in our life? Or is it that somebody is actually already decided what you're going to go through and you are just going through the ups and downs which the path, goes through? Because a very common thing which would come up is, I read a poem somewhere, I can't quote it verbatim, but it goes that one day I woke up in the morning and I couldn't see around because the mist was covering the whole space. So I rubbed my eye and I rubbed my eye and I kept rubbing my eye, but I couldn't see anything clearer. The sun rose, the mist melted away, then I could see. So was my effort responsible in me being able to see clearly, or was it just to fill the time before the sun was anyway clearing the mist?
You know, at the same time, I was reminded of an experience that happened just about 2 weeks ago. You know, the winter has set in Prashanti, it's very cold outside. What happens is, you know, I am driving towards Bangalore,
okay.
And as I'm headed towards Bangalore, the glass in front of me, you know, it fogged up. It fogged up, completely obstructing visibility. And at that time, you know, the option seemed like you have to wait for the fog to clear out. But you know, in reality, it was not the fog. It was cold outside. It was warm in the car, so it was fogging up. Can you believe it? I put on the air conditioner and directed it towards the glass, and everything cleared up. So, while me sitting simply in the car was not helping, the slightest of effort on my behalf, on my side, it just cleared up everything. And you know, an example like this seems to be like a complete and direct counter to the point where when the mist is there, it's no use rubbing your eyes.
So that, dear listeners, would give you a very, very clear idea of which side of the fence each one of us is sitting on. And maybe through the discussion, I will be trying to buy Arvind over to my side, and that's exactly what he will be trying to do.
Yes, so dear listeners, in case it is not very clear, Prem strongly believes and is completely loyal to destiny. While somehow it, I mean, this is, I don't know, I would be giving 1 point to Prem in saying it. The Lord decided it that way, so the destiny has it that I am a strong proponent of action, and therefore I would be on this side of the fence. But before that, you know, Prem, this question came up, you know, in me, and I am a member of many internet forums. And there was this particular forum where I went and posted this. My question was, how do you resolve this debate between destiny and free will?
Okay.
Is there destiny at all? Is there free will at all? Or are both there? If both are there, how much is destiny, how much is free will? And you know, we shared the answers. So maybe we can read out. You know, dear listeners, it'll be very interesting to listen. One answer was this. This person says, I don't think there's anything like destiny, but I definitely think that free will is limited. We are entirely a result of what has happened around us, who we know, and every single experience we have had and how this has influenced us. We never make a decision out of nowhere. The choice has to be open to us, and it is only a choice because of our circumstances. And our circumstances determine whether we want to do something or not. So, I definitely think that we are wholly influenced by free will, but free will is limited. That's what he says.
Okay, there's one more respondent in that, and he's saying here, my mind spins when I think about this question. Understandably so. I first think, how did we come into existence spiritually? Then how did the spirit get embodied? Did we have a say in the very beginning? If no, then there is no free will. We did not do the creating, even if things evolved by some cosmic evolution of which we are just a tiny part of. How did we really get there, get here on this planet? I know I would not choose to be here. I want to be in, this is some fantasy here. I want to be on some other planet or in a different part of the universe where I have mystical abilities and I do not have to work to maintain. My conclusion is, if we have free will at all, it is minute. Think about it, so many egos running around trying to do what they want to do. How could a will really be free here with so many restrictions?
And then, you know, while those two are strongly advocating destiny and, you know, saying free will is very limited, minuscule. Here's a professional psychic.
Mm-hmm.
And she writes, as a professional psychic, I no longer believe in destiny. I have seen far too many people use their free will to change their lives, to believe in a fate where you have no choice. The concept of destiny also doesn't jive with the concept of a loving God who gave us free will in the first place.
Okay, there's somebody else. I think this person too is buying that kind of a belief. God has created us in this world with the supreme blessing of free will.
Mm.
So God is given the blessing of free will. That's what this person believes. Destiny is something also can be created by constant pursuit of anything essentially positive for a positive result, and negative will reap some negativity at the end for sure. So life is all about free will for me.
And then there are some very interesting answers. You know, one person says, you have the evolution of your past life which brought you to the current cycle,
mm-hmm.
that you cannot do anything about. You have the karma of the life you were born into in this cycle. That is your parents, your country, the lifestyle you are raised in. These you can do nothing about. You have the moments between childhood and death to make a difference this time. But there are still outside influences, good and bad. So in answer to your question, I would say about 17.3 to 27.9% is free will. The rest is destiny for the average user.
He's sure to be a mathematician or a psychologist, I think. And here's another one, and this is also quite elaborate. Destiny by its very definition is one which can't be controlled. Okay. Yes, I had this question popping up in my mind on many occasions. I even tried to take a statistics of a few happenings in and around my life.
Hmm.
It nearly revealed me that destiny and free will are in 50-50 range.
Hmm.
Okay, this is more, liberal in its outlook. But the only dilemma one encounters when trying to separate the happenings under these two headings is, which is where? This is where our intelligence plays a role. This recognition plays an important role in controlling the happenings in life by finding ways to control it. This recognition also paves way for many inventions and discoveries. Let us pray, may we be given the wisdom to know the difference between the two. Now, did you ask this question to control the controllable actions in life, to control the uncontrollable? Let us develop an equanimity of outlook.
And finally, there's one, again, very, very imaginative and creative answer which says, man is like a serpent with two heads. One head goes ahead freely and predetermines the path of the second head.
Mm-hmm.
The other head simply has to follow the natural movement imposed to its body. Thus, man is both the master and the slave.
So that's a whole lot of answers, and each one as profound and different from the other. But, you know, just taking the question which this listener sent to us, and where this question actually stems from, because this listener is saying that we heard your program last week, especially the part where we spoke about Swami, negating the effects of astrology or predictions from...
Changing the lines on the palm.
Right, changing the lines on the palm. Thus, can this kind of a grace be won by self-effort? I think that is one of the questions which is coming up. And the other thing is, but you also see that sometimes Swami does not want to interfere with karma. You know, we always talk of God as the eternal witness. You just go by what you have done. You know, you do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. So God is not doing anything to interfere and change things. So that's where this question has come.
When does God interfere? How does he interfere?
And what does it take for you to make God interfere?
Yeah, do you doing something make him interfere more often? Or do you doing something make him interfere less often? You know, these are the questions. And actually, if we scour through the discourses that Swami has delivered, you will see him on occasions, you know, if we can say advocating the destiny concept, you know, saying that it's all done. Not a leaf moves without the will of the Lord. Not a blade of grass can move without the will of the Lord. At the same time, there are instances where he is advocating hard work, effort that you need to do. So, it's almost difficult to find a discourse where, you know, Swami speaks about both. Both with the same energy and vibrancy.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he has stitched together both in one statement, which he uses again in many discourses, and that is, what you meet in life is destiny. how you meet it is self-effort.
Okay.
I feel as a starting point, this is good, because if we take side of destiny, the effort guys are going to scream up. If you take the side of effort, the destiny guys are going to scream up. So let's take a statement that includes both, where both are given their due, and maybe start off our discussion with this statement where Swami says that all that you meet in life is destiny, but how you meet it is self-effort.
I think that's more of, as you said, a liberal view, and people would prefer that, you know, those who want a peace at the end of the argument would always prefer that, and it's definitely a good point to start with. And I think a classic story which comes to mind when you say that destiny is fixed and you just reach it the way you wish to reach it through your effort, I think the story of Parikshit, right?
Exactly. The story of Parikshit goes like this. For those who are not aware, I'll recap it briefly. Parikshit is a descendant of the great Pandavas. He's ruling a kingdom. But then what happens is, one day when he's on a hunt, he's very thirsty. He's not finding water anywhere. He's alone and lost. He comes across a hermitage of a saint, a sage who is lost in deep meditation. He tries to ask the sage for water. He's so thirsty, and you know, thirst makes you quite angry, frustrated and irritated. That's what he is. When the sage doesn't respond, he gets even more angry. He just wants to vent that anger, and in his attempt to vent the anger, he picks up a dead snake and puts it around the neck of the sage. The story goes that he leaves, the son of the sage comes back, and he's wild at the person who did this to his father. He doesn't even know who has done it. He pronounces a curse, saying that whoever has done this to my father will himself die of a snake bite within 7 days from now.
Right.
And that is a curse on Parikshit. He knows that in 7 days he's going to die. At that time, you know, Parikshit decides to have his priorities set right.
Right. The story goes that the father comes to know of the curse the son has given, and he's very upset about it. So he makes the son go and apologize to the king. And you know, that's the beautiful way the story goes. He says that you go and let the king know that this, you know, this fate is coming to him.
That's actually a blessing, because none of us know when we're actually going to die.
So that's the predicament Parikshit is left with. He knows that 7 days from that day he's going to breathe his last. So now is laid in front of him the choice of what to do with those 7 days. So he gives up his kingdom and he renounces everything, goes in search of satsang. That's what the Bhagavatam says. And Sukha Maharishi is the one who comes to him to his rescue, and he narrates the entire Bhagavatam for those 7 days.
The story of Lord Krishna.
The story of Lord Krishna. And at the end of it, the way the story goes in such a beautiful way, he's so immersed in the thought of the Lord, that finally the last day the snake comes to bite him. It says, I think Takshaka is the snake which comes to bite him. The snake comes, bows down in front of him and says, I've come with you with a gift of death.
Mm.
And you know, the Bhagavatam says that Parikshit is crowned with death. You know, that person who was cursed with death ends up being crowned with death.
And you know, again, there's another little play of destiny and the impact of effort in that little time in the end. Though Parikshit is listening to the story of Lord Krishna, meanwhile, other people who are, you know, concerned for their king, they want their king to be, they decide that we will destroy every snake in the vicinity. And they make a fortress kind of protection around so that no snake can get in.
Okay.
So they think that if there's no snake to bite the king, how can the king get bitten? But story goes that Takshaka, as a tiny, you know, the size of a worm, is embedded in an apple, which goes to the king, and when the king apple is cut, Takshaka comes and grows to the size. So on the other side, you know, in one hand you see how King Parikshit used his effort and converted, you know, what is inevitable, destiny. How he met it was left to him. On the other hand, you see the people's reaction. How they met it was in a wrong way, you know, in the sense they said, let's go destroy the snakes, let's go and ensure that nothing happens. But all that were of no avail. In the end, the snake anyway got him. So it highlights that the how we meet it part is left in our hands, and that's where effort comes in.
Right. And so that's where we start. But of course, the question comes, like, why was Parikshit drawn to take that effort? You know, he could have chosen anything. But what made him choose that?
You mean, was it Parikshit?
Was it his own choice? Did he decide that I'm going to take this choice and do it, or was it that a choice was made already? Because nevertheless, Parikshit's story too is part of Bhagavatam, which is already written. You know, most of our scriptures are said like that. You know, you take the story of Ramayana. Valmiki is said to have written it even before he actually knew that Ramayana happened. So which means it was a story which was already fixed. So is that meant only for avatars, or is that meant for all of us, right? And that's the question which comes to us.
Well, yeah. So the problem comes is when you're putting efforts, if you're told that, you know, your efforts don't count, then no matter, you know, it's all destined. It makes destiny look like one cruel giant who is there slapping, who is illogical, doesn't reward the good, doesn't punish the bad, just plays, runs amok into our lives, throws everything, you know, creates haywire, throws everything haywire, creates hell, pell-mell. It looks so cruel. I mean, it doesn't seem that a loving God would have done something like this, where you do good but you get bad, because that's destiny, face it. You do bad but you get good, enjoy it, that's it, that's destiny. I mean, it seems so illogical for God to do it.
Or maybe the destiny actually decides what's going to happen, and with time you realize that what you felt was something which was an event which you have to run away from, which you have to avoid, was itself a blessing for you. You know, similarly what happened to Parikshit, you know, those people who would have observed Parikshit would have learned the lesson that after all death is not something you need to fear. So similarly, destiny might give you some blows which may make destiny appear like cruel, but eventually you realize that whatever happens is for your good. You know, I remember one of my seniors, a very interesting story. You know, this boy, his mother was very, very particular that he should become a student in Swami's college.
Okay.
And he was absolutely not interested because he was already working. So his mother wanted him to join for MBA. He was already working and his career was going fine, and he thought, why unnecessary break and into such a rigorous routine? You know, when you can understand, you've already finished your studies, you're in your youth, you're earning your own money. Why would you break that and come to a hostel where you have to wear a uniform and sit and do bhajans and get up in the morning and all that? So he was absolutely not interested in this thing. But his mother was very particular, got the application, filled it for him, and gave it to him, and he said, you just have to sign and just post it. So this boy, very consciously, he left out a few signatures in that application.
So that it's incomplete.
So sends it, and it gets rejected, you know, that was the idea. But unfortunately for him, the application comes back, saying that you have forgotten to sign here, please sign here. And that reaches his mother.
Okay.
So even if it had reached him, he could have, you know, just buried it and said that he submitted, but there was no response. But his mother sees it, so mother tells him that, you know, how dare you do this, and gets him to sign it and tells you better post it. Now what he does, he puts a wrong postal address in that, making sure that it doesn't reach the university. Now what happens, the postmaster, who has forwarded a lot of applications to the Satsang Institute, knows that this address is wrong, so he makes the correction and makes the post. So the post reaches finally, and he gets the call letter. So finally he ends up writing the entrance exam. He tries not to do well in the exam, but he clears the exam.
How was that?
He has no idea. Okay.
Okay.
So now he goes for the interview. Now he tries to behave like he's very bossy. He gives curt replies and he gives very overconfident responses to the questions they ask. Now the panel tells him that you're a very confident young man and people like this should take up MBAs. So we are happy we're taking you for the MBA. So you can imagine, you know, this boy is putting all kinds of efforts to not join Swami's Institute, but destiny plays its trick and he becomes a student of Swami's Institute, and needless to say, eventually he's very happy for it. You know, when he passed out, he was telling us all this, and he said, I'm so happy that it happened the way it happened. You know, had my efforts actually given me what I was looking for, I would have missed something so great.
Yeah, Prem. Well, in response, I will tell you one more story, you know. But before I tell that story, isn't it a possibility that the boy's mother had prayed so much, had put in so many efforts to get the boy in, and later on also you said that a letter goes to her. So there is a possibility that the mother's efforts fructified, her efforts were greater than the boy's efforts. Well, that is for your consideration. Now I'll tell you my story.
Okay, before you go to your story.
Okay.
So which means there is something which can overrule your effort.
Somebody else's effort.
Yeah, so your effort can be overruled. Okay, now you can continue with your story.
Okay, now look at this This boy was 2 years senior to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he had decided that at any cost, he wants to be with Swami. He wants to stay here. He wants to serve, work here. Now, if I tell his name, you will immediately jump up and say, see, he's not here. He's not working here. That's it. So, but if you go ahead with the story, you know, he wanted to work, stay with Swami, and even after his education, he wanted to be here. He completed his MBA.
Okay.
And one day when he got a chance to speak to Swami, he said, Swami, whatever happens, please, I want to stay with you. I want to be here. Swami said, no, you go out. You have to go out and work. Then he says, Swami, you know what? This one birth, I've got this. I've realized the chance. It is such a wonderful thing. Please, this one birth, let me be with you.
Right.
After that, any number of births, I'm ready to go out and work. Swami says, no way. You have to go out. And this boy realized that in spite of his best effort, Swami seems so unrelenting. So he decides, it's okay, fine. Then if I have to go, I have to go. He decides to go and he finds a good job. And he's a very, you know, an ideal, perfect Sai student. A student of Sai, living by Swami's ideals. And so much so that he wins accolades in his office. He becomes a very trustworthy and very loyal and an amazing person, an amazing employee. Everybody is happy with. Till it comes to one situation where, you know, he not only does his office work sincerely, he's also involved in so many other, you know, activities. Like he goes to an orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
And he's almost like a parent in that orphanage, taking care of the children, telling them stories, helping them, guiding them, teaching them. It's so wonderful, you know, an ideal life he's leading. Till it comes to a dilemma where there is a program in the orphanage for which he's an integral part. He has agreed to attend it, and at the last minute, he's called by his boss and told, there's a presentation here. You have to do it. This is the most vital thing. I mean, not doing it would lead to such a terrible repercussion that he might even lose his job,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's such an important thing. But the problem is it has been told at a last minute notice, and this boy doesn't have the heart to break the hearts of so many orphans in that orphanage. And from within, when he seeks the answer, he gets the answer and he just doesn't go to his office. He goes to the orphanage instead. And he's ready for the worst. That evening when he returned from the orphanage, he used to stay along with two or three of his, one of his classmates and two other friends. They were all staying together, four of them. They look at him and say, what happened to the food? He says, what food? They say, you had come back half an hour back. You said you will go and get the food. Where is the food? He says, I came half an hour back. I'm just returning now. He's so shocked as to how is it that three of them are hallucinating at the same time. Then he gets a bigger shock when somebody from his office calls him, his boss in fact, and congratulates him on an excellent presentation which actually won them the deal. Now he's amazed, he's thrilled, and he knows that no way is this possible unless Swami was with him. And you know, it is very evident that Swami took on his form and did his job there. You know?
Okay. So went to the presentation.
People at home have also seen him.
All right.
You know, they are saying you came half an hour back and you have gone to get food, which is not the case. And finally he went and got the food, but he did it so joyously because he felt that, you know, however cruel destiny may be, destiny might have destined that he cannot stay with Swami. But he, with his love, his prayers, his sincere effort, he knew for sure that if I do this, destiny might keep me away from Swami, but it can't keep Swami away from me. Swami is with me. You know, so, well, effort can change destiny. That is what I feel, you know, from this.
So he didn't have to go and do the presentation. The presentation was meant to be done. It was done anyway.
You know, no. It goes on.
Yeah, it goes on. But definitely, you know, that's where this topic becomes all the more interesting, where no final word can be said so hands down. And it's an endless debate. And we have a time restriction of 1.5 hours, and we'll have to end it within that. But we will try to, you know, look at the various dimensions of this debate, not trying to give a conclusive answer to it, but we'll promise to give you a lot of things to think about. But before we get into more of this debate, we'll maybe play a small song and take a short break. And when we come back, we will look at this question in a little different manner.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Jai Yadunandan Param Niranjan,
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 Rama Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda,
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 Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga,
Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radha Raman Shri Ranga Mukunda, Radha Raman Shri Ranga.
Jai Govind, Jai Jai
Radha Raman Hari Govind, Jai Jai
jai jai Govind jai jai
So Arvind, continuing with our discussion. So who would like to go first?
I think you go first because...
Okay. Maybe we'll start with why each one of us are convinced about, you know, what we are convinced. Definitely what we have gone through in life is what has given us the conviction. So maybe it'll be interesting to see the root of why we believe in what we believe in.
So you tell me... You tell me what was the route for you to take, I mean, what route you took in life that has ended up with you feeling destiny, and I'll tell you the route that I have taken in my life that has ended up with me saying effort.
Right, you know, initially, when in the few initial years of college, you're aware we've spoken so much about Trayi sessions. You know, when you're staying in Vrindavan, you're a student of Vrindavan, that is like the most important part of your day schedule when Swami is there in Vrindavan. You want to go and sit close to Swami and you want to be near Swami. So I found, you know, and just to give an idea to our listeners who are not aware, around 3:30 our college would get over and around 4 we should be there in the dining hall to be part of the lines which would leave to Mandir. And there would be bhajans there. And at the end of the bhajans, the same line which came first for the bhajans will be sent first inside Trayi. Right? And that's the protocol.
And the lines was just like the devotee lines where we will have tokens.
So there is as much for luck as it is for effort.
Correct.
Right? Now you could come right in front and make sure that, you know, even if your line goes first, you need to be first in that line.
To get very close to the
jula. To get really close to Swami. So you could come and come running and come and sit right in front, but still your line might be picked last. So in spite of you coming first, the fellow who would have lazed around and come in, you know, come later, would be lucky to go and sit somewhere closer to Swami than you are. Okay, so it's a concept which has as much stake on luck as it has on effort.
Okay,
so it was a perfect setting to test which works better. So, you know, initially I used to come running 3:30. And if you have to come and stand and be one or two in any of those lines, you have to come really fast.
You know what, Prem? I think your example will resonate well with
the
all
devotees
our listeners
as well,
because
right.
This is what happens in the devotee side.
Right. So in the initial one or two days, you know what I did? I came running from Mandir. And of course, I was not having this idea of testing
from
this...
From college.
Right, from college. I was not having the idea of testing this philosophy, but it just happened that way. I came running from the college, got ready quickly and came and stood near the dining hall. And the moment they allowed us to go inside the dining hall and form the lines, I would go and sit first in any one of the lines. Right? And that day, my line went first. So it set me thinking that, see, maybe it's because I have put this effort of coming running and I have done all this thing to come and sit in front. Swami is rewarding my effort by letting me sit close to Swami in Trayi. Okay? So I thought one time is too small a sample size to come to a conclusion. So then I did the same thing the next day and the day after that. And almost every time I would either land up in the first line which would go to Trayi or the second line which would go to Trayi. I mean, second line was also a reward good enough for me to at least, you know, think of this concept to be working.
Correct.
So it's happened 2-3 times.
I mean, it's like if you aim at the stars and hit the top of the mountain, you're not going to complain.
Right. Okay. And then it happened that I said, okay, let's see if I don't put the effort.
Okay.
So one day I just came casually. I just casually went to the... and, you know, invariably putting this effort means missing that afternoon tea. You know, so that if you... Even that much, if you go for that tea, you might miss this chance. So you skip your afternoon tea and do all that. So that day, you know, you...
Just like the devotees would, you know, often skip their lunch
or you know,
put their mats
in the place. It's similar to that. Of course, we have a little more advantage because the numbers are lesser. We're not battling it with a few thousands, but just a few hundreds in the hostel.
And our lines begin a little later.
So this was going on, and a few days I tried to come relaxed. You know, come casually to the room, have a good wash and go have your tea and come slowly. And those days my lines wouldn't go forward. It would go 5th or 6th or 7th or 8th. So it made me feel that, see, it...
So So there's a direct relation between your effort and the results.
And the results.
Hmm.
You know? So I said, okay, so you're putting effort and you're getting the reward. So which means effort, Swami sees the effort. Swami rewards the effort. So effort have a bearing on what you receive in life. Okay, and then one day I thought, see, how valuable is that opportunity of sitting near Swami?
Invaluable.
No, it's so precious. It's so very precious to be sitting right in front of Swami. So can it be got by just 15 minutes of effort? Am I trying to tell myself that I've put 10 minutes of effort or 15 minutes of effort and this effort is the reason I'm getting that chance? So I just felt that I'm just trying to be over ambitious. I'm trying to grab to myself maybe that which was given to me as a gift. I am trying to own it completely by saying that I put that 10 minutes of effort and so Swami has given it to me. So I said that it cannot be directly correlated like that. And to kind of validate this kind of thinking, this theory of you put effort and you get rewarded, you put effort, your line goes first. I mean, over the years, I found that it never holds good. You know, some days you're just randomly picked up for the grace. Some days it just happens that you put the effort and you get it. So there is no direct correlation between this. It's just that we are always trying to connect one to the other and then
What if I say that, you know, you put your efforts and you got, and the minute you started changing, you know, thinking that, you know, actually this effort doesn't matter. It stopped working. Was it not like a self-fulfilling prophecy? Because, you know, you are blessing yourself or you are cursing yourself. When you believe strongly that, you know, when I put effort, it works. And then you say that, I don't think it works.
When going by that, then you can never take the side of effort also. Because here is some concept which is changing depending on you. So truth should be truth for everybody. You know, the sun is the same color whether you are seeing it from America or from India. I mean, forget, I'm just evening out all the other possibilities. What is something should be that in any who sees it. You know, it should be the same whether you see it or I see it. It should, something which changes depending on your mood and your beliefs cannot be the truth.
So you felt that there is nothing about putting efforts to reach Swami or get Swami. So means how did your thinking evolve after that?
Yeah, so I began to feel that you do the efforts you want to do, but that effort is only for a kind of self-satisfaction or for some appeasement of yourself.
What you
have to get, you will get. Okay. Like, you know, if I'm wanting something from Swami, if Swami wants to give it to me and if that is there for me, it will come to me. It will come to me whether I put the effort or I don't put the effort. So I should not do the effort for receiving something. Maybe the fulfillment of the effort lies only in the effort. You know, you do it. If you want to do it, you do it. If you don't want to do it, you don't do it. Don't think that because I did it, I got it, or because I didn't do it, I didn't get it.
Then how do you explain, you know, doing seva, doing bhajan? Swami says, go and help the poor, help the person who is needing your help. I mean, when you say, then if I say that is his destiny, that is a poor fellow's destiny, that is that needy man's destiny. So he's facing his destiny. So I mean, how do you come to terms with that?
I did ask myself this question. You know, that's when this thing comes. I feel one of the most strongest lessons from the Bible, if you can take, is that do unto others what you wish others to do unto you.
Exactly. So do efforts.
No, it is not doing in that sense.
Okay.
It is the way you approach. Approach people the way you would want others to approach you. Or approach situations in certain way. In a way, when if you are in the situation, you don't mind being approached that way.
Okay.
In the sense, like suppose you are in trouble.
Okay.
Okay. And if I am going to think that this trouble is meant for your good. Okay. I can absolutely believe in that. It is not wrong in me believing in that. As far as if I am in the same situation and if you are going to look at me in the same manner, it will not hurt me.
So suppose you are in need of some help and nobody comes around helping you. I mean, suppose I say that it's good for Prem's good and I leave it. So you don't get upset when people don't come to your help?
Yeah, I shouldn't get. In theoretically.
I mean,
if I'm not there, I'm not there.
I mean,
it doesn't mean that I'm, the concept is wrong. It means I'm not.
No, in the sense, maybe, because that is your firm conviction.
Right.
So that is what you're working towards. Working towards you not getting affected whether people care for you or not. You not getting affected if people, you know, in the sense, help you or not. Is that what you're working towards? In the sense. Because, I mean, that should be your effort, right?
I don't know if I'm working towards that. You know, that's where the thing is. it's not so simple like, yeah, I'm doing this, I'm not doing that. It's like this, you know, like, suppose, let's say, I'm unhappy about something.
Mm.
So I tell myself that why am I unhappy? Because according to my concept, I'm not supposed to be unhappy about this. Because if it is happening to me, it's good for me. If destiny is giving this to me, it's meant to be that way and it's good for me. So I'm not supposed to be unhappy. Then the question comes, why am I unhappy about being unhappy? So maybe I'm supposed to be unhappy. Maybe this too is part of the process. So where the desire to not be unhappy also vanishes.
Okay.
So it completely removes any kind of desire to do effort. Your effort is also not because you are doing the effort, you want to do the effort. The effort is also part of the plan.
An effortless effort.
Yes, exactly. You know, that you really nailed it, because that's what the, you know, some of the Vedanta, if you see, that's what it says. Do the effortless effort. Which means you are not doing it, and it's not an effort, but it's an effort.
You know, Prem, it's actually now, you know, making sense little by little, because from what I know of you, what I knew of you, you know, before actually getting to know you so much better and well, you know, it looked like you're a person who's phenomenal. You know, now you're definitely phenomenal. But at that time I felt you're phenomenal because I felt you're a person who is staying here and, you know, so convinced, waited for so many years without Swami giving anything. And the best thing is, it didn't look like you're doing any effort to win it also. In the sense, you didn't seem to be doing anything to make Swami, you know, want to give you something. But at the same time, it was not as if like you were unhappy. In the sense, there have been ample opportunities. I also remember once, I think Swami also sent word that you either work for me or you leave and go. And at that time also, you didn't express any desire to Swami, saying that, Swami, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to do. So I always felt you are phenomenal. But now I think I'm getting a glimpse of what was the, you know, underlying conviction for that phenomenal nature.
Again, you know, going by the same theory, I cannot claim to have reached that state or claim to have got it. It's just there.
You're destined to be phenomenal.
So in that sense, I mean, yeah, you call it phenomenal because it appears like somebody has achieved it.
Mm.
I just feel that it's something the way I'm meant to be. So I really don't understand, should I be even proud of it? Or should I admire myself for it? It's just that I am the way I am, and just like the mixer is, the mic is the way the mic is.
Oh, so it's an absolute state of being, which is so...
I'm sorry, I'm not claiming to be that, but intellectually, yeah, I feel that is the ideal thing which someone's supposed to be. And the fact is, you know, eventually, the question is, are you happy the way you are? Yeah, I'm happy. Now, are you peaceful the way you are? Yeah, I'm peaceful. So it really works. I mean, if you're asking that, does this concept, thinking about this, work for you? I feel it works.
So all the while, you credit everything to destiny. Everything is predetermined. So just like an actor in the drama who appears to get angry and sad and goes through ups and downs, but actually is undisturbed. So you feel that is the reality?
Yes. You know, because I feel I'm not even, it is not even my choice to be angry. It's not even my choice to be peaceful. Hmm. It's just the role is being played out that way. That's all.
Well, interesting. You know what, Prem, actually I had gathered my thoughts with my story, but your story has come and bombarded my story at places where I feel there are loopholes now. So maybe for me to strengthen my story, I would like a few minutes. So maybe we can take a break now.
Okay.
And after the break, dear listeners, I will tell you my story as to why I believe so strongly in efforts.
And that, dear listeners, should be something which should not be missed, because Arvind is quite convincing when he puts forth his point. So even if you got mildly convinced because of what I said, be ready to be revoked by what Arvind is having to say for you.
प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं तेरी ज्योति का विस्तार हूँ मैं प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं तेरे ज्योति का ही प्रकार हूँ मैं प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ मैं अधिक शुद्र हूँ मैं विशाल हूँ कोई भाव मैं खयाल कोई गीत ही अविराम प्यार हूँ मैं तेरा प्यार हूँ
Saram, dear listeners, welcome back to this satsang where apparently a debate is on and you will realize why I say apparently. But before that, you know, Prem gave a wonderful exposition on his concept of how destiny and everything is so well destined. But my life, you know, it has been different. As a child, I was exposed to a lot of, godliness, not godliness actually. I had a very devout family and they exposed me to God and
okay.
They told me, they taught me, they said, you do good, God will reward you, you do this. In the sense, even when I read some things what Krishna has said or Rama has said or different masters have said, none of them, you know, ever advocated doing bad. In the sense, they would not say that it's fine, you go ahead, you kill anybody, do anything you want, it doesn't matter because what's supposed to happen to you is already done. They would always exhort on right action, right conduct. So this was how I grew up. And when I got to know about Swami and Swami school, I had this intense desire that I want to join Swami school.
Okay.
And my mother told me that, you know, if you want to join Swami school, you will join. Start working for it. So I started working for it. Like, you know, I would try to wash my own clothes because I heard that when you go to Swami school, you have to wash your own clothes. At least, you know, wash your own plate before, after eating,
right,
rather than keep it for the maid servant, though she's there. So, small things, not that I would do it regularly, but here and there at least, you know, all these are attempts to get in. And of course the entrance exams or studying, all this happened. And I didn't get into the primary school at Prashanti. I didn't get admission. And when this happened, you know, the thing that was coming to me was my efforts were not good enough. If I put in some more efforts, maybe I'd have got through. And my parents also supported me. They said, yes, don't give up. You've got a long life ahead.
So every time there was, the results of the efforts were not coming, you're only putting in more efforts.
Yes. Okay. The thing was, I was told that that was my conviction, that if your results are not coming, it's because the effort is not sufficient. Don't give up at the 90th blow. Okay. If the 92nd blow is going to break the rock, hit the two more blows. Don't hit 85 blows and say it's destined not to break. That was how I was thinking. And so, I tried to find out, what can I do to improve my chances of getting into school? And I remember Principal Shivram Krishnaya sir, he was saying that, you know, they have a preference that is given to students who are coming from other Swami schools.
Okay.
You know, when they take admission in 11th class, which was the next time I can try.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they are already through the system. And if they have done well in Swami school, they will do well here also because they know the system. And because of that, I refused to go back home. I traveled to Kerala and joined Sri Sathya Sai Vidyapeeth. It was a new place, new kind of people, everything different. But I felt that if that is going to increase my chances of getting, let me do it. And it happened actually. You know, it worked. I got some one or two nice chances in Swami's physical presence. That was when I got a chance to deliver my first speech also. And that was the time, you know, I got a chance to physically pray to Swami that, Swami, come what may, promise me that you will always keep me with you. And, you know, actually, I don't want to go into the details of those big stories, but the first time I got a chance to speak in front of Swami, it didn't happen because the chief guest for that Onam celebrations came late, because of which the other speeches were cancelled.
Okay.
So though I had prepared so much, I never got a chance. And you know, I was actually mocked by so many of my friends. They said that, you know, you said that you were going to give a talk, and I had prepared my best. But at that time, again, my thought was my effort was not good enough. Let me put more effort. And 2 years later, I got the chance. I got the chance and I got a chance to tell Swami also that, Swami, let me be with you forever. And Swami patted and said yes. And the next year, I got into higher secondary school at Prashanthi Nilayam.
Mm-hmm.
4 years late, but I was not complaining. I felt that's it. Yes, it got me. And in the school also, you know, 2-3 small things. They are tiny things from the eyes of the world, but huge things for me. I remember one day I noticed that the classroom was very dirty because the cleaner who was supposed to come, he had fallen suddenly sick and he had not come. In the lunch time, you know, I didn't go for lunch. I thought, let me put some effort. I didn't go for lunch and I swept the whole classroom on my own. Didn't tell anybody about it, and I said, Swami, I don't want to tell anybody because if they praise me or, you know, if they do anything, that will be like encashing the good I have done. I would like you to keep in mind and you reward me when the time comes. Mm-hmm. I was rewarded that very evening where Swami created Vibhuti right in front of me and called me and took the handkerchief that I offered. And so, you know, I thought this is a formula. I do something silently and Swami rewards. It happened like you only, once or two times.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it didn't happen. But while you went along a line of thought that is, yes, that you so beautifully justified, my line of thinking was, oh, this is not happening because, you know, Swami wants to give me something grander. So he's like, you know, saving up. It's like when you save up to buy a pen, one saving is enough. But if you want to buy a bike, you save up 100 times. You don't get for every save. And it used to happen, you know, I used to do like this. There are numerous instances, numerous experiences where definitely I have received from Swami something that I didn't deserve at that point in time. That made me feel that, you know, maybe all those work that I am doing and I am doing the good, that inspired me to do more good because I felt all that doesn't go waste. It counts up, it adds up. And when the time is right, it is given in such a way that it is most memorable for you. And so that kept happening time and over again. You know, even there are many incidents. I won't go into the individual incidents.
Okay.
But that used to be my motivation for doing good. In fact, I remember on one occasion when I started doing good towards a cause. You know, like you say that I want to save up 20,000 rupees for earthquake relief.
Okay.
Like that, I said I want to save up good for going with Swami to Kodaikanal.
Okay.
Okay. So I kept saving up good, and in the sense, so many silent acts which I make you, sure that nobody notices.
Okay, you make an offering to Swami saying that, Swami, this is for that account. For making me to put a canal.
And make sure I would not like it if some teacher comes to know and says, you know, Arvind is doing an amazing thing. I would say, oh God, encashed. Why? I don't want the praise. Don't. Because this is for that account. You know, exactly like that. But I didn't get to go to Kodaikanal. Okay, I didn't get to go to Kodaikanal. At that time, I even felt, after Kodaikanal, when Swami returns back, he was in Vrindavan, he was giving Trai session. I felt, let me not attend the Trai session. Imagine. I used to feel that if I attend the Trai session, I may encash what I have accumulated good. Of course, that was my feeling, but ultimately I attended the Trai session. I didn't miss anything. I would never go home for vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I would often feel that vacation is something that I love so much, I will not go. That is another effort that I am doing to show Swami that I want you and you alone. So it will reward. And you know what? To this day, I have not been to Kodaikanal even once. But I am not complaining because, you know, I was part of Swami's entourage to Harshi. I was part of Swami's entourage to Delhi. And I am not complaining. Of course, I was working towards Kodaikanal. But I felt that it's something like the bank saying that, you know, you are making this deposit, I know, this is for 8%. But how about I use this deposit and give you 15% interest? Wow, that's great. I felt with the Harshi and Delhi trip, that's what Swami did. In the sense, you know, encashed those good, saying that, because at that point in time, there was nothing special that I did, which I feel gave me the deservedness to go along with Swami to Harshi, while the other did not deserve. I just felt it was the accumulated good. So that is my conviction and belief, and therefore I strongly believe that no good will ever go waste. So every moment keep doing good, keep doing good. If at all something bad happens, you know, my view approach of destiny is like, destiny is a resultant of all the actions that you have done.
Okay.
It's already done, you can't change it, so it's given to you. But now you can do actions that will change, because that resultant, if we keep doing good again and again, again and again, again and again, the resultant of that destiny will start shifting towards good, slowly. And a point in time may come, that is my faith and belief, that a point in time will come when I have exhausted the bad and negative. And I have not added any more bad or negative in terms of my action. So then on, it's going to be happily ever after. So till then, let me keep doing good, let me keep striving the way Swami says, let me keep doing Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, Ahimsa. And keep going on and on and on. And that's why I strongly feel that destiny is a resultant of our actions. And we can keep doing actions to ensure that our destiny changes. It may not change immediately, because it's a resultant of so many actions, which I don't understand about, of my previous birth. So therefore, I will not waste any effort trying to understand. I cannot understand the previous birth. I won't make effort to understand. Let me be solution based. What can I do now? So from now, let me do only good, be only good, because sometime that resultant has to change and start becoming good. So therefore, now even if a tragedy or a negative thing happens, apparently negative thing, I say that now my effort should go in convincing myself that this is not a bad thing. This is not a negative thing, this is something that I had to face. And in reaction to this, if I show anger, irritation, frustration, well, I'm adding up actions which are going to get more such reactions. So I will refrain. I will just absorb it like a sponge and leave it off and continue to do good. Continue to do good. Someday it will get exhausted and I will only keep getting good. That has been my life experience, and as you said, I have sincerely followed it just as you have followed the destiny path. And today here I am, happy, I am peaceful, I am contented, and I look forward to life just like you are peaceful, you are happy, you are contented, and you look forward to life.
So I think that is more or less the arguments placed before them, because here is you believing in something and here is me believing in something totally different, but at the end of the day both of us are happy in the way we are and it's working out for us. You know, maybe we are not in the highest state of happiness, which Swami actually says is the ultimate, but at least we are happy the way we are right now and we are heading towards that in our own ways.
That I feel, Prem, is a very important thing, because, dear listeners, you won't believe it. Yesterday, exactly 24 hours back at this time, if you had noticed Prem and me, it would have looked like we were the sworn enemies. I mean, you know, as long as we were considering that these are two differing paths pulling in the opposite directions, the argument and the debate that came had so much of fire and smoke, it was scary. We felt that, you know, we may not be able to have coffee with each other that day. It was like that. But you know, immediately I realized that all said and done, Prem with a belief, this is what I felt, Prem is having a belief and conviction that is totally opposite to mine, and yet he shares the peace, the joy, the motivation, the passion, the energy, the enthusiasm which I have. How is it possible that he is on a totally opposite path but shares all the traits that I am having? And that is when I felt maybe the paths are not opposite. And then that is when this started, that instead of it becoming a heated debate, it started becoming a meaningful dialogue that we are having today.
Right. And you know, it's very difficult to separate the other, because you know, it's always, because if you look at Swami's discourses, Swami's always emphasized on effort and do this, you know, take to the right path. But often, you know, especially students, if you see, we all have faced that decision. Like, you know, as you said, what am I going to do now? Most people, they come to Swami, they become the student there, and the question is, okay, I've seen Swami now, what should I do now? So then they say, I'm deciding to do Swami's work all my life. So they make the decision, they stay back here, they're working here. And then few months down the line, they go to, you know, what's very, very famous in India, and I think it's famous in some, with some foreigners too, is what you call the Nadi reading. You know, an it's something similar to astrology, where they believe that there are some saints. You know, Sukha, we spoke about Sage Sukha. There's even a Sukha Nadi.
There's an Agastya Nadi.
There's an Agastya Nadi. They are said to have written the future of so many future generations. And they also know which among these billions will actually come and look for their Nadi, and that person's Nadi is written. So how much of what we are going through in life is already fixed? Because then many of our students, when they go, and there in their Nadi is written that you will meet this master, the supreme master, and you will live all your life with him. So what was meant, what was for you a decision which actually split your head, was actually a decision which was already made, and you are only living through the rigors of making that decision.
Beautiful, Prem.
But it doesn't take away the effort which has actually gone into it. Because you have lived through it. You know, who can come and tell you that you have not put the effort? Actually, you have done the effort, right?
You know, Prem, it just makes me feel now that if you are convinced about everything being destined, it's fine. Because, you know, if you go to Swami and ask Swami, is it destiny or self-effort? I feel Swami's answer will be, choose either or choose neither. It's fine. Because I feel, you know, if you are convinced about destiny, it's important that you stick to destiny. And I feel that was the lesson that I derived from yesterday's argument. Come what may, nothing could shake you from the fact that it is destiny. Okay, so automatically, when I credit you for all the good you have, you say, no, I am not good. It's just destined. At the same time, if at all I find some faults with you, you say, no, don't find fault, it's destined. That's it. So, you're in a state, I mean, theoretically and practically, you're coming close to it, but in a state where you neither condemn yourself nor praise yourself, you have reached that state. You know, at the same time, when I look at myself, you know, you spoke about Nadi. Another long story, but the conclusion of that was, when I wanted to go to a Nadi, Swami said, shut up, don't go. And gave me the wisdom that, what do you want to go to the Nadi when I am here who can change everything for you? I felt that because I'm an action-oriented person, Swami's experiences that I have had in my life, and life experiences where Swami is physically not present too, have all kept enhancing this, kept enhancing my belief and got me strong. In the same way, for you, all your life experiences have been such that they have enhanced your conviction about destiny.
And actually, they're not any different from each other. You know,
exactly.
That's the thing. It's not
the same
like
thing.
Somebody has gone through a different set of experiences. And it's not even that, you know, it's just that you were meant to be the way you are. I mean, coming back to that.
You go back to that.
Right. But, you know, that's the beauty, because you raised the issue of seva. You know, then where is the question of going and serving somebody? You have to serve, because what Swami says is that beautiful Chinnakatha, which Swami says when a renunciant sees a scorpion which is drowning, he picks it up. And then it stings him, he puts it down. And then again he picks it up, it stings him and puts it down. And somebody comes and asks, what are you trying to do? He's saying, no, that scorpion is drowning. I am not able to manage the suffering I'm feeling when I'm seeing that scorpion drown. So I'm picking it up to actually give myself solace.
Mm.
And now the scorpion is stinging me. I'm not able to bear the pain, so I'm dropping it back into the river. Again, I'm not able to bear seeing it suffer, so I'm picking it up.
So Swami, I'm doing it for my service.
Right. When you do seva, you're doing it only for self-satisfaction. That's why Swami says self-satisfaction is the beginning point. You do it not because that person needs it and you are in an upper position to give it to him. You're doing it because it is going to give me peace.
Because there's some restlessness that is within.
So if you ask if a person is fixed in the idea that destiny alone rules, why will he actually do action? That action which he does is actually guided by his restlessness. If in a situation you are propelled to do action, then you are meant to do action. If you can absolutely be in inaction and are completely comfortable with yourself and will be the same in all situations, then you have all the license to be in inaction. And that will be a spiritual inaction.
You know, that spiritual inaction is tough because we can be in inaction as long as good is happening to us and bad is happening to others. You know, but the minute bad happens to us and good is happening to others, it's tough to remain in inaction, you know. And there comes the fallacy or the paradox, because if a person strongly believes in destiny, he or she will have no concept of good and bad at all, because everything is just destiny, you know. So I feel maybe the lesson that we can draw home from this whole debate, discussion, satsang is, no matter what we believe in, ultimately let's be true to ourselves. If we believe in destiny, let us truly stick to that. What often happens is, a person believes in destiny and says, you know, he is destined to get it, so he'll get it. I'm destined not to get it, so I won't get it. He's fine. But the minute he says that somebody else also got it, somebody else also gets it, somebody also gets it, he suddenly feels that, you know what, maybe if I put effort, I can get it. So there he lets go of his conviction and destiny and starts moving to the action. In the same way, you see a guy who is doing a lot of action. He does this and he gets the result. He does bad, he gets bad. Suddenly an occasion happens where he does something and bad happens. And he does something again, good, something bad happens. And then he looks at somebody else who is doing nothing and apparently good is happening. Instead of at that time, you know, being a proponent of action, the thought should be, I am not working hard enough. Let me work harder. Let me work harder. If I don't get, let me work harder. Because I don't know, I might have been hitting the 80th blow. I don't know if I'm hitting the 90th blow or the 91st blow. Let me not give up. And you know, Swami says, Pattudanam, when he says, right, don't give up till you get what you're seeking or till you collapse with the effort. That much you have to put effort. But at that time, we simply give up our effort theory. And we say, there is no use of working because it's ultimately destiny. He's supposed to get it, I'm not supposed to get it, so no use of working. The problem comes when we shift. It doesn't matter whether we believe in destiny or effort. What matters is we don't shift, because when we keep shifting, that is when the doubts, the confusion, the problem comes in. With firm conviction, let us proceed, because both lead to the same goal, because both have been taught by Swami.
And also, you know, the problem comes when you choose one over the other is also because when you are expressing a weakness, you know, generally when people resign themselves to destiny, it's like, there's no point in me doing anything here because everything is destined. You know, that kind of an approach and believing in destiny is actually detrimental to one's progress. It is not acceptance of destiny because it overrules you. It is because you consciously are aware that, yes, nothing can happen to me without God's will, and nothing that happens to me can be bad. You know, why will you not go to fix a problem if you don't see it as a problem?
Exactly.
You don't go to fix a problem because no problem. But if you don't fix the problem because you think that I'm not strong enough to fix the problem, then it is not the right way to accept destiny.
I think that's a beautiful way to, you know, physically distinguish in whatever way we can. While an action-oriented person sees life as a set of problems coming one after another for which you have to actively keep working and finding solutions, a person in destiny sees no problem in life at all because everything is meant to be
and
the
maybe,
way it's meant to be.
Right, and maybe if there is any effort that person has to do, it is to remain unaffected by the problems which are coming by.
An effort to remain effortless.
Effortless, right.
Wow. So I think, dear listeners, we have come to some kind of conclusion, because, you know, in the ultimate sense, when Swami says, you and me are one, let us look at it from the truth, viewpoint of truth. It's not a viewpoint, this is the point, that is the truth, where we all, if I and Swami are one, and if I consider destiny to be God's will for me, and effort as my will, and if Swami says, you and me are one. If we use the additive property of mathematics, A equal to B equal to C, therefore A equal to C. So if destiny is God's will and effort is my will, and if I am equal to Swami, then God's will and my will is the same. There is no difference between self-effort and destiny. It is the same. But until the time we get to that level, achieve that level, because we are all constantly moving towards that, that is the ultimate goal. Till then, it doesn't matter whether you hold on to the destiny strand or hold on to the self-effort strand. What matters is we being sincere to that, we being convinced about it, not shaking in our faith in that, and holding on to it till the very end. Because in the end, it is going to be oneness.
And exactly, you know, the way you said, if you go and ask Swami, Swami will say, you choose either of the thing, and definitely, you know, in fact, I remember it seems one devotee had asked Swami, and Swami said, are you trying to get the secret behind creation in one question? Because the thing does not lie in the answer. It does not lie in whether it's destiny or, you know, effort. It lies in the path. It lies in the question. It lies in the quest. And that's why the spiritual quest is very important. But maybe, Arvind, it would be in place to just read a small passage from Swami's discourse where Swami actually talks about free will and destiny.
Okay.
And the way Swami puts it, I think definitely it's far, far better than how we have confused ourselves to put it. And Swami starts that passage by saying, some students today talk about free will. Okay. Only the divine has free will. Meaning that there is only one will, the point which you came to. Man is endowed with a will, but not a free will. When the divine free will moves, the human will also operates. There are a myriad leaves in a tree, but not a leaf will move in the absence of wind. The leaves have no free will, but they have a will, which can be swayed when a breeze blows. In the tree of life, human beings are like leaves. When the divine will blows, the human will begins to move. Thus, there is need for the coming together of divine will and the human will. Then there will be the blossoming of a human nature. Man can never achieve anything by his own efforts. There is something which a man accomplishes without much effort of his part. There are other things which he is unable to accomplish even with his best efforts. What is the reason? It is on account of the play of the divine will. How the divine operates may be known from two examples from everyone's experience. The heart beats and the lung breathe without any conscious human effort. These are the results of the operation of laws of nature according to the divine will. There is nature on one side and human effort on the other. The two should function in unison. When there is such unity, you have purity. That purity leads to divinity. These are not three different things, but three stages in the process of a tender fruit achieving ripeness. This is a discourse Swami gave, the New Year discourse of 1993.
Beautiful. A New Year message. I think we can take it as a New Year message for us also. I mean, whether you look at it from a destiny point of view or a action point of view, if you're a leaf in the wind, from an action point of view, it just means make effort to swing along with the wind.
Right,
don't go against the wind. If it is you're taking from a destiny point of view, it just says, don't bother. You're anyway swinging the way the wind blows. So, I mean, these are just two ways of seeing the same thing. That's what we realize. But since we are in a, what can we say, in a dual world, where we feel there is happiness and because Swami says pleasure and pain are the same thing, there's no difference. But since we are in a dual world, either way we choose to see it is fine, as long as we are sincere and truthful about it, because ultimately they are the one. I mean, I think with that tree and leaf example, Swami has beautifully summed it up. The time in our studios is 1:59. Dear listeners, the debate does not end here. It is not actually a debate. It should actually spur us on to, you know, bring about changes or do whatever in our life so that we are able to be more peaceful, more happy and more serene. And if destiny helps you to do it, good. If you have to pick up arms and work for it, go ahead and work for it. But please, we feel that we have to be convinced about the action that we are doing or the acceptance that we have. Because shifting between boats, riding two horses at the same time will not help. If you have any other thoughts, if you wish to share, you can definitely share. We are awaiting your feedback. In fact, this whole satsang has been created out of feedback. So it is a feedback that actually makes this local satsang into a global satsang, where all thoughts can come together, where good thoughts can come from all directions, ano badraha, as they would say, and we can have sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu.
And if there can be two views when two people sit together, there can be many, many more views when all of you all come together. So let us know what you think about this satsang, and if possible, we will share it with all our listeners the next time. But till we meet next time, which will be with a fresh Satyam Shivam Sundaram episode. Till then, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai with Arvind offering this humble effort of ours at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet.